On July 3, 1863, the people of Gettysburg awoke to a sound that one witness said seemed almost like the crashing of worlds. Dozens of Union cannons had opened fire on the outskirts of town, attempting to drive back the Confederate army. The battle that began 2 days earlier would end that afternoon with appalling statistics, more than 45,000 casualties. There's been enough written about that epic fight to fill a library, detailed hour-by-hour accounts, military strategy, personal narratives, medical histories. The latest book is by historian and NPR producer Noah Andre Trudeau, Gettysburg, A Testing of Courage. It pulls together the newest research and is the first in-depth retelling of the entire campaign and battle in more than 30 years.
More people died in Civil War battles after Gettysburg than before Gettysburg. Gettysburg's a turning point for a couple of reasons. One, it changes Lee's whole approach. At this point, he's now buying time. He's no longer looking for the decisive battle. And for Lincoln, it so inspired him that he gave purpose to the Union. He used that battle as the symbolic reason why we fight.
Okay, to battle. Lee had been on a winning streak here.
Yes and no, meaning he had won at Chancellorsville, but he was not satisfied with that victory. He really needed to so defeat the Union army that the Northern politicians would say, we can't win this war, let's try to negotiate a peace. So he went north looking for the opportunity to really bring the Union army to battle and really whip it. Gettysburg was circumstance and chance. His army was well north of the Mason-Dixon line. He had one part of his army out towards Harrisburg. He realized that the Union army was much closer than he thought. He needed to concentrate it. He was going to bring it together to the east side of the mountains, and he'd actually picked Cashtown, which was much closer to the mountains, as the point of concentration. But the Union army had a leading edge right at Gettysburg, and that clashed with his troops as they were concentrating.
So they almost stumbled into each other.
First day's battle was a battle of accident. Second and third day were battles of Lee's design.
He didn't have a plan.
Not on the first day.
Right. It seemed like from reading the hour by hour, he didn't even know that his army was engaged. He might have heard some shots far off, but knew little about what was going on.
Well, don't forget, a Civil War general knew basically as much as he could see on top of a horse, which limited somewhat his understanding of the battlefield. And he'd get as much good information as bad information from couriers, so he had to sort all this out. And you're absolutely right. Really, until late in the day on July 1st, he really thought, it's over, let's just let things cool down, let me get the rest of my army together, and we'll fight the battle tomorrow. But then things brewed up again, and he had to go with it.
Well, who was leading the army on the first day?
I think the man who really brought the battle on was one of his corps commanders. The Confederate Army was divided into three corps, and one of them was commanded by Richard Ewell, who comes onto the battlefield late in the day, misreads the situation, seems to believe that the remainder of the army that's there is under threat, and really precipitates the fighting that goes on in the afternoon of July 1st, which results in the Union troops being routed and falling back to Cemetery Hill.
July 2nd was a fairly good day for the Confederates.
From Lee's point of view, there's an optical illusion that makes it seem that as if the Union line is running along the Emmitsburg Road. The Union line diverged from there, but Lee didn't realize that. He set up his entire plan on July 2nd, assuming the position of the Union line, and it wasn't there. And as a result, his plans were really unraveled a lot that day.
What the North had on that third day was several strategic spots. They had some high ground, and they made effective use of that.
Well, Lee was forced by the results of July 2nd to attack the center of the Union line. I think Lee underestimated the morale of the northern side. There was clearly a feeling on his part, if I hit these people hard enough and often enough, sooner or later they're going to break. Well, these were tough guys in the Union, and as a result, he wound up sending his troops forward into a line that really didn't break and had to deal with all that artillery and fire. So that was really what undid him on July 3rd.
And in the case of the famous Pickett's Charge, they were wide open.
It's ironic that I think Pickett's Charge is synonymous with the doomed, desperate effort against overwhelming odds that any child could see wouldn't work. But really, there are a lot of pieces to this that don't get acknowledged. I would argue that Lee had planned, if you will, a 20th century action with a 19th century army. He looked for an integration of infantry and artillery, infantry and infantry, to a degree that just wasn't capable. But if it had all worked, wow.
It didn't work, and he withdrew. Do you feel he needed to? Did he have to go?
Well, let's not forget at this point, he's well into Pennsylvania. the longer he sits there and does nothing, the more the North organizes against him, so he couldn't stay there much longer. Interestingly, he later would say he didn't lose the campaign. He really felt he did the two critical things he needed to do. He needed to gather a lot of supplies, and he sure did that. And he needed to throw the North off balance so that it would not mount a campaign into Northern Virginia in the summer of 1863, and it didn't. I think where he lost was his sense that he could deliver that grand victory, that he went there with the best army he ever had, and he couldn't bring off that victory.
In fact, the losses are almost precisely even.
That's part of the recalculation that is done. When you read older histories, you'll see that the general assessment was that the North lost more than the South. But as we see now, the losses were almost equal. Lee took a tremendous beating. His army started 30,000 smaller than the Union Army, and to lose on parity with that army did not bode well for the future.
And General Meade, who was leading the North, was severely criticized for not going after Lee.
Well, you have to feel sorry for George Meade. I mean, he's plucked from a corps commander position on June 28th, thrown in charge of the largest army in the Union at that time, in the midst of its most desperate campaign, with the greatest odds riding on his shoulders, Washington screaming in his ear, and he needed to deliver something to save the Union. Meade felt he had done a good job, and all he was getting from Washington was, why don't you do more? Why don't you do better? You know, Lincoln says, I was reminded of the image of a woman with a dress trying to shoo geese as you pushed Lee away. That's tough for a proud person to take, and I think Meade was a proud person.
There were giants out there and colorful names involved. You know, Custer was out there, Abner Doubleday, Jubal Early. You didn't have Sherman and Grant, but you had a great many others.
Gettysburg was really a battle of personalities and heroes. Certainly Joshua Chamberlain, the Bowdoin professor, who a civilian put in charge of a regiment holding a critical position on the Union line on the 2nd of July, has to improvise tactics to meet a very determined flanking effort to turn the entire Union line. He's a great character. To a certain extent, too, after the war, as he retold the story, his role got a little bit better and his foresight a little more acute. But that's the nature of reminiscences. That's the challenge of working with them, is trying to sort out how much is added after the fact versus how much could they really have known at that time.
Not to mention a speech by President Lincoln some months later.
Well, I think when you try to look at what makes Gettysburg the icon that it is, certainly the soldiers remembered it, and I think we picked up some of that from them. But at the inauguration of the Gettysburg Cemetery, Lincoln really put into words, I think, why a democracy goes to war. We go out to defend that a government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. It worked then. I think it still works now.
Historian and NPR producer Noah Andre Trudeau. His new book is Gettysburg, A Testing of Courage.